The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
Good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to Sports Talk New York on WGBB here in Merrick, Long Island, New York. I am Bill Donahue. I'm taking you through the fifth day of May 2024, the first hour of Sports Talk New York. It is Cinco de Mayo. Our engineer, Brian Graves, is celebrating with a margarita right now. He's across the way taking care of business. Up first tonight, you will recognize him as a longtime personality on WFAN. Evan Roberts will join us. Evan has a new book titled My Mets Bible, and we're going to discuss that. Next, we will welcome in the great author Peter Golenback, who has a new book out himself that's titled Baseball Heaven. We'll talk to Peter about that. Finally, we'll speak to Pete Bachmore about a very worthwhile event taking place in our area upcoming that I'm sure all of you would like to hear about, especially you pickleball players out there. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow me on social media, Facebook. The Talk of New York Sports is out there. So much information, photos, great stuff. Stop by, take a look. You can also follow us on X at Sports Talk New York, NY at the end of that. Follow me on X at B Donahue, WGBB. And if you miss a show, don't worry, because they're all out on the website at www.sportstalknewyork.com. You can catch up anytime at your leisure. Well, our first guest is known to you guys as the co-host of the Evan and Tiki radio show, along with Tiki Barber on WFAN. He has a new book out that it's really a great read, My Mets Bible, Scoring 30 Years of Baseball Fandom. I'd like to welcome to Sports Talk New York tonight, Evan Roberts. Evan, good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
We're doing great. We're doing great. I want to ask you, you grew up in Cedarhurst, as people may not know. Who were your early sports heroes, Evan?
Oh, man. My dad was my sports hero because he's the one who taught me to watch the Mets every day, watch them lose, be frustrated, but never give up.
Right.
So I'll start with him. As far as on the field was concerned, my first favorite player was Doc Gooden. Mm-hmm. Because it was 1992, and he was, like, the most recognizable guy on the team. Obviously, that wasn't the best of Doc Gooden, which I didn't realize until I learned more about baseball. But, yeah, I think that the Mets were my first love in sports. So everybody on the 92 and 93 Mets, I know, what a time to be alive. That
yeah.
really got me loving the team because that was the age I was. The problem was they were the worst team money could buy.
Right. That's and who was that? Bob Clappish, who came up with that one. And like so many other broadcasting luminaries, Evan, you are an alumnus of WGBB, correct?
Yes, I did quite a few shows on GBB back in the day, so it's an honor to be back home.
Very good. It's great to have you aboard. Now, you're also a movie star, I found out. Yes, you played a part in a Lloyd Kaufman Tromo film, Tromeo and Juliet. We won't touch that one. But I want to know, what scene were you in Howard Stern's Private Parts?
Well, here's what I would say.
Yeah.
I would say that Private Parts is one of the great movies of all time. I would definitely let everyone know they should see it if they haven't. And you will come across an awkward redheaded boy in the back of a car, and I will say very, very, very inappropriate things that I will never repeat. But but you'll enjoy the movie. Maybe not my scene, but you'll enjoy the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it is a good movie. I remember that. Good times. Now, you get your job at the Fan. You do the overnights. Then you get paired with Joe Beningo. You guys had a 14-year partnership. How's Joe doing right now? And tell us a little bit about your partnership with Joe.
Joe was great. You know, when I was listening to the Fan growing up, I would listen to his overnights. I called a couple of times. And getting the opportunity to work with him and become friends with him for 14 years and do road trips with him, it was great. I still talk to him. He is the same. He is the same guy. He expects doom with the New York Jets.
Right.
He is a little bit hopeful right now with the Knicks and Rangers. He's very nervous about what's going on with the Mets. Joe is Joe. He's the epitome in New York sports. And every day when I went to work working with Beningo, it was fun. That's the way I would always describe it. It Never felt like work doing shows with Joe Beningo.
Well, that's the way it sounded, too, Evan. That was a great period in FAN history. Now, speaking of Joe, you are a Jets fan as well. I am, too, but at least, Evan, I remember Super Bowl III. My question to you is just why?
Yeah, there are certain teams in sports that are just tortured. They're just tortured. Mm-hmm. But I always say to myself, if the Boston Red Sox can break the curse and win a championship, if the Chicago Cubs can break a curse and win a championship, someday, I'm not sure when, it's probably not going to happen now with Aaron Rodgers, but someday, and hopefully I'm on the planet to see it, the Jets will soon have their day. But they are one of those tortured franchises in sports. And I'm jealous of you, and I'm jealous of Beningo and my dad, who at least has that one memory and moment of winning a championship. That seems so foreign to anybody of my age.
Right. I can look back and I can remember guys like Winston Hill and Pete Lammons and George Sauer. And they're almost like the 69 Mets because they're heroes of my youth. And like I said, at least guys like Joe and I got to see that. So I don't know if it'll happen in my lifetime, Evan, but I hope it happens in yours. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
Now, fingers crossed, man, that's for sure.
We'll get to the book, My Mets Bible, Scoring 30 Years of Baseball Fandom. It's from our friends in Chicago, Triumph Sports. Now, I used to keep score. There used to be a guy at the bottom of the escalator selling yearbooks and scorecards, sort of like I guess they do now at Citi Field.
Yep.
I think they were a quarter. And you'd get like a little book with it. It was quite cool, and they'd give you one of those free lotto pencils. So do you remember the first game you scored, and do you still have that?
So here's what's funny. I don't remember the first game I scored, but I found the first game I scored, and I put it in this book because, to me, that's a game that matters. It's significant, even if I have no recollection of it, because it started this obsession I've had since I was young, which is I score every game. I mean, literally, any time I can sit down and watch a Met game. I sat down today, I watched the Met game, I scored it. Last night when I sat down and watched the Met game, I scored it. So I found the first one, and when I did, it was fascinating to look back at it. And it's very similar to what you laid out. It was one of those magazines that my dad bought for me. I looked at the price. It was like $1.75. It came with one of those little pencils. And that's how I scored for the first few years of my life. The game, by the way, was in 1992. It was against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Barry Bonds ended up hitting the game-winning home run, and the Mets lost. So it seemed perfect that the Mets lost. But I did that for the first, I'd say, 4 or 5 years that I scored. And then I think my dad said, you know what, I'm sick and tired of spending $2-3 every time we go to a Met game. Like, I'm going to buy you a book.
Right.
So he bought me, like, a Modell's scorebook that they still sell to this day. And then about a year after that, he was reading Baseball Weekly, the old Baseball Weekly, which I loved as well. And he saw a commercial for the Bob Carpenter scorebook. And I think it's when Bob Carpenter, now the Nationals broadcaster, first came out with that scorebook. He bought it for me, and it's been 30 years. I buy the same book from Bob Carpenter every year. I score it the same way. And even at the age of 40, I'm 40 now, I still score every game in that same book. And I can't even imagine scoring in anything else. But
yeah,
you're right. Like, when you go to games, they still offer that. It's a lot more expensive than it used to be, but they still offer that ability to buy the little magazine, the scorecard, and score that way. And I did that for the first, I'd say, 4 years of my scoring life.
Yeah, I don't know what it costs now, Evan. I know a yearbook is probably around $20. It was 50 cents when I started going. And you got a lot more meat in the yearbook. You got statistics. You got good photos. Not all ads. The only ads were like Tommy Agee's Outfielder's Lounge, some illicit motel in Kew Gardens, you know, and of course, Rheingold. So.
That's right. Rheingold beer, of course.
Exactly.
Yes.
We're speaking with Evan Roberts tonight. Now, do you use an elaborate system, Evan, like Keith Hernandez does with his highlighters?
I don't do colors, and I've always been fascinated by how Keith Hernandez does that with the highlighters. The one thing I do, and I don't know if it's elaborate, I mean, you could tell me, is I do balls and strikes. I like to put the direction of where the ball was hit. I like to sometimes mention if it was a line drive or if it was a bloop. But for the most part, it's kind of your basic one line for a single, two line for a double, make the diamond to show if they scored or where they ended up on base. But I've scored the same way. I don't think I've really altered much over the last 25 years. I've gotten comfortable with it. And I have never involved colors, but I am fascinated by how Keith actually does that.
Yeah, I'd like to know exactly what he does. Now, all this scorekeeping, folks, it forms the core of Evans Mets Bible. You get memories, you get nostalgia. Tell us some of the more memorable games that you've scored, Evan.
Well, there's a lot of wins and there's a lot of losses. That's for sure. This is not like Mets Classics on SNY where I only picked the good stuff. I picked the, and the way I phrased it was the most memorable games I scored. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, memorable goes both ways. So when it comes to the wins, the Robin Ventura Grand Slam single jumps out at me. Johan Santana's no-hitter, being in the building for that, the first no-hitter in the history of the Mets, jumps out at me. And believe it or not, there are some regular season games, like beating the Yankees in the first-ever Subway Series game.
Oh,
the Dave Malicki game is one that I love. And I'll tell you the game that I've thought about this, especially writing the book. Because what I did is I published each of these scorecards, but then I also write about what was going on in my life or what I was thinking about at the time. Writing this book made me realize that the Jacob deGrom game against the Dodgers, Game 5 in 2015, sort of recent if you think about it. It's only been 9 years.
Right.
I think that's pound for pound the greatest game I ever watched. And the game that gave me the most joy after having the most, I would say, like, stomach aches. Because it was so freaking exciting and there was so much on the line, a winner-take-all game. And so I think this exercise in writing this book and going through all the memories kind of put that game really above everything else. Game 5 against the Dodgers with DeGrom showing the guts, with Syndergaard coming out of the bullpen, with Familia getting the 6-out save. But on the other side, Game 1 of the Royals in 15 was a killer. Game 1 and 5 against the Yankees in the 2000 World Series. It was also very depressing writing this book because there's a lot of games like that just rip your soul out. The Kenny Rogers walk game where John Franco and Armando Benitez both blew leads. Mm-hmm. Game 6 of the 99 NLCS. Yeah, there's a lot of that too. It's all mixed in.
Almost like today, Evan.
Yes. Very similar, yes.
Now, you keep all these. There's one game, folks, I want to mention, though. There's a loss that Evan has never gotten over, but we're not going to tell you about it. We're going to leave it up to you to find that out when you read the book. So there's one game that gut-wrenching as anything else. Check the book out. You'll find out. Now, has anyone ever asked you for one of these scorecards, Evan, or have you ever donated one for a charity auction or something like that?
You know, people have asked me for copies. I don't think anyone's ever asked me for the original because I don't even know how we get the original because it's all in
books. Oh, it's in your book. Right, yeah.
Yeah, but I know that there people share memories. You know, that's the thing about baseball and sports is they share, hey, I was at that game too. I happened to score that game too. So there is that fascination with comparing notes. I remember looking at Howie Rose's scorecard when he, with Johan's no-hitter. It was actually in the Met Hall of Fame when they had the Met Hall of Fame at Citi Field. And it was so fascinating to look at and, like, compare it. And compare, like, did his hand start to shake in the eighth and ninth inning like mine, where you can kind of see the penmanship is maybe not as nice as it was in the first few innings. But I think a lot of us, especially those who score, like to kind of compare the memories and the scorecards of these classic games.
What do you do, Evan, if you have to take a short pause for the cause? What happens then?
Well, you know what? Years ago it was very complicated, but in 2024 I hit that pause button if I'm watching the game at home.
Okay,
I pause it.
What if you're at
then,
the ballpark?
And then I come back. That's how I live life now because, like, when I score these games, I still have to be a dad and a good husband.
Exactly.
So most of the time I watch these games on DVR. I could still go out in the backyard and play with my kids. Otherwise, I either would have no life and not be married, or I would give up watching baseball. It's the same way I always have. So, luckily, technology's made it a lot easier.
Outstanding. Now, through all this scorekeeping, this book, Evan has he's forged for us, really, a unique chronicle of modern Mets history. So, I recommend this book. Who is your favorite Met of all time, Evan?
I loved Rico Bronya.
Wow.
Rico Bronya was my guy. He was a lefty. He was brilliant defensively at first base. That's what I tried to be and emulate when I was young. I couldn't hit, but I was decently defensively at first base. And I always loved Rico. I do a Mets podcast I named after him in his honor, Rico Bronya. And I still have his jersey to this day. So Rico was my guy. Look, in more recent time, Jacob deGrom was somebody I really loved, especially because I always felt he was disrespected by Met fans, disrespected in that they never scored him runs. So I always loved Jake, but I think, especially going back to my youth, Rico is my guy.
That's very it's very unique. I'm glad to hear you come up with a guy like that rather than, you know, a David Wright. Not that he doesn't deserve to be somebody's favorite, but Rico, I had recently spoken to Colin Cosell, and I told him about Rico Bronya, and I said, Colin, you would have a field day with this guy, because the name rolls off the tongue, and it would be outstanding for a PA address announcer to take care of Rico Bronya like Colin does.
Oh, it's a great name. I mean, that's a part. Maybe when I was younger, part of what I loved about Rico was simply his name. Rico Bronya, like, it's perfect.
It's like a gangster's name. Yeah, I know. Now, if you were on the Mets, Evan, finally, what would be your walk-up song?
Oh my God, that's a tough one. Right now, I've got my boys in a professional wrestling, and they love it as much as I do. So, in honor of who they love and what they've enjoyed, it would probably be Roman Reigns' theme music. But that's more of a modern take. Like, I don't know, throughout life, it's probably changed based on my mood. But in tribute to my kids and in tribute to our tribal chief, I guess it would be Roman Reigns' wrestling theme song.
Yeah, I forgot that you're a big wrestling fan. When I was watching wrestling, it was the days of Hulkamania with Rowdy Roddy Piper and Mike Rotundo, and I forget who his partner was, his tag team partner was. You had Greg the Hammer Valentine, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, the Iron Sheik, and Nikolai Volkoff. Who's your favorite grappler of all time, Evan?
Well, that's a good question. I loved watching Kurt Angle. He was more recent, more modern. But I thought he was just a pound for pound one of the greatest wrestlers I've ever seen. And then I loved Stone Cold Steve Austin. But it's funny is that you mentioned some of those older wrestlers. My kids are 7 and they're 3. And they know about those guys you mentioned because of the WWE Network. Like, I've shown them Hulk Hogan. I've shown them Roddy Piper. So it's amazing with modern technology how a 7-year-old who's getting into professional wrestling can love what's going on today, but actually have a great appreciation for the wrestling from 30 years ago, which I think is cool because that's what I grew up on. I mean, I guess I was a little Hulkamaniac back in the day, you know?
Right, yeah. I hope the kids are saying their prayers and taking their vitamins and keeping up with the wrestling, Evan. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I thank you for taking time out of your Sunday night to spend some of it with us here down at WGBB. I wish you the best with the book. Again, folks, it's called My Mets Bible, Scoring 30 Years of Baseball Fandom. Thank you once again, Evan Roberts.
Thank you. Let's go Mets.
That is Evan Roberts, ladies and gentlemen. Up next on Sports Talk New York, we will welcome in the prolific author, Peter Golenbach. Stay with us, folks.
To Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You are listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
We are back with Sports Talk New York here on WGBB. Thanks for stopping by and hanging with us on what was a real dreary day here on Long Island. But we will move on. Our next guest, he has written more than 60 books, including 10 New York Times bestsellers. His latest work is titled Baseball Heaven, Up Close and Personal, What It Was Really Like in the Major Leagues. I welcome to the show tonight, Peter Golenbach. Peter, good evening. We lost Peter, folks. We'll get him back as soon as possible. You're going to enjoy this interview, folks, because Peter has come up with a book that really tells the behind the scenes and as the title says, up close and personal story of an era of baseball. Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Charlie Gehringer, Hank Greenberg, Mickey Mantle, Elston Howard, covers a bunch of eras of guys he's spoken to. And we're going to talk about that. I believe we have Peter back, so we are going to go to him right now. Peter! Peter!
Yes, sir!
Yes, here we go! All right, welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you so much.
Now, this book, which I mentioned in my open, which you were absent for. This book highlights all the interviews that you've conducted through the years and really some golden nuggets from those experiences. How many ball players, managers, executives have you spoken to, do you estimate, through your career?
I'd say probably between 250 and 300.
Wow. Okay.
Now, you know, I did Dynasty where I interviewed 50, 60 Yankees, and I did Bums, so I must have interviewed 55 or 60 Brooklyn Dodgers. And I did Fenway, which was the Red Sox, mm-hmm. Wrigleyville, which was the Cubs, the Spirit of St. Louis, which was the Cardinals and the St. Louis Browns. I did Amazing, which was the Mets over the years. And I've got, you know, all of these fabulous interviews that I did on tape.
Wow, that's some collection and something, an archive that you can really be proud of and enjoy.
Absolutely, absolutely right. And for this book, you know, Baseball Heaven, I thought I would pick some of the most interesting people I had the pleasure of meeting and interviewing over the years. And that's why these people are in this book.
Brings back to you folks, really, a lot of history and really captivating conversations that Peter has had with guys, and we'll talk about them now. Eldon Auker, Peter. Tell the folks who may not be familiar who Eldon Auker was.
Well, nobody's familiar with Eldon Auker.
Oh, I know who he is. Sure I do.
Well, you know who he is.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, he was a star with Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
I went to interview him because he was at one point a St. Louis Brown.
Right.
And so he lived in Vero Beach. I went to his house to interview him. And there, staring me in the face, was this fantastic photo of Babe Ruth hitting a home run. And it says, to Eldon, my good friend, Babe Ruth.
Oh, man.
So despite the fact that I was interviewing him for my book on the Cardinals and Browns, I decided let's start with the beginning of his career, how he became a Major League Baseball player. He was with the Detroit Tigers the first bunch of years. So we talked a great deal about his time with the Tigers and Hank Greenberg and all the fabulous Tiger players he played with. And then he gets traded to the Boston Red Sox, which is interesting. Joe Cronin was his shortstop and his manager.
Mm-hmm.
And these are things you have no idea. When you interview somebody, you have no idea what they're going to tell you. So he's telling me he's pitching for Cronin, and Cronin is calling his pitches. Cronin, at the shortstop position, is calling his pitches, telling him to throw a fastball or a curveball or whatever. And he's just furious because Cronin, as far as he's concerned, Cronin has no business doing this. It should be he who is calling his own pitches. And so he spends one season with the Red Sox, very, very unhappy, as most of the pitchers were. They were unhappy with Cronin. I mean, Red Sox fans often wondered, you know, why did the Red Sox do better? They had Ted Williams, you know, they had Joe DiMaggio's brother. They had all these wonderful people. Why didn't they win?
Right.
You know, you get the feeling that some of it had to do with Joe Cronin, the way he managed his ball club. And then of course he went on to the St. Louis Browns, where he had fabulous stories to tell about those people. You know, the Browns actually ended up in the World Series in 1944.
Right, during the war,
During the war, and would have ended up in the World Series in 45. You know, they had that one-armed ball player.
Pete Gray,
and he's telling me how this particular pitcher is basically torturing the guy. I mean, the other players hated Gray because they felt he shouldn't be playing. He had no talent.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they were playing him, of course, was so that he'd draw fans. And this is just the stories that Eldon was telling me. It's just a fascinating, fascinating character, and that's why I thought I'd lean him off in this book.
Good, very good. I have a similar experience, Peter. Back when my parents were alive, they lived up in Citrus County in Florida, and I used to visit them and go to spring training, a lot of teams in the Bay Area, as you know. And I would look up through Mr. Smalling's address book, old ball players, and I'd see if they would mind if I stopped by. So
sure.
I got to visit with Billy Rogel, Danny Littweiler, Bert Haas, George Foghorn Myatt, just and these guys. Billy Rogel welcomed him me into his home,
right?
Regaled me with tremendous stories. And he was a tough little guy, Billy Rogel. And
he was a tough cookie.
Yeah.
He also wrote his autobiography, which I have autographed by him.
Oh, very
good.
So
a lot of those stories are in his book.
Because he played on those great Tiger teams too,
with
Charlie Gehringer.
Yep.
That was an amazing infield with Hank, Charlie Gehringer, Billy Rogel at short. And I think Marv
Owen was the third baseman.
Yeah, Marv Owen, exactly,
yep.
Peter.
That's right. That's
mm-hmm.
exactly right, yes.
A fantastic team. But that's the story that I have about interviewing some of the greats of the game. Now, the Eldon Walker story that you mentioned in the book has to do with Lou Gehrig.
Yeah. I mean, so he and Gehrig were friends. And he goes into the Yankee dugout and starts wrestling with Gehrig. And Gehrig's going, Eldon, oh, Eldon, please stop. You know, and Eldon's going, Lou, what's wrong? He says, I got something. I'm not well. I don't know what it is, but there's something. You know, and this was, you know, a couple of years, you know, they figured out that he had ALS.
Mm-hmm.
Which is now known as Lou Gehrig's disease. And, of course, he had that day at Yankee Stadium. You know, I consider myself the luckiest man. And then 2 years later, he died.
Right. Wow, that is an amazing story.
It is an amazing story. I know it.
And then you go on to talk about another Hall of Famer, Happy Chandler, who was the commissioner of baseball during the Jackie Robinson era. And he lived in Kentucky, I believe.
He lived in Kentucky. He was the governor of Kentucky.
Right.
He was a senator of Kentucky. And while I was doing Bums in 1980, which was like 30-something years after Jackie Robinson came into baseball, it occurred to me, you know, they took a vote on whether Jackie Robinson should be allowed to come into baseball. And the vote was 15-1 no.
Wow.
The only one who voted yes was Branch Rickey. So it occurred to me that maybe Happy Chandler had something to do with this. And so I called him. I called him up, and we must have talked for an hour. And that's the conversation that is in this book. And come to find out that Chandler said to Rickey, you have my permission to bring Robinson up to the Dodgers. And he said to me, and the reason I did that is that when I'm on my deathbed, you know, and I'm talking to God, and he said to me, you are not going to go to heaven because you didn't bring this guy up to the major leagues.
Right.
You know, it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
So, all these years later, nobody really had understood the importance that Happy Chandler had in the civil rights movement, because Jackie Robinson, in my opinion, was the beginning of the civil rights movement. You know,
yes.
Without Jackie Robinson, you don't have Brown versus Board of Education, in my opinion.
No, you're exactly right, Peter, yes.
And so, it was just such an important conversation, I felt that I should put it in this book.
Peter Golenbach with us tonight on Sports Talk New York. Now, you also spoke, Peter, to perhaps one of the most gracious men to ever play Major League Baseball, Ralph Branca, who spoke to you about.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the major thing that Ralph is remembered for, which is the shot heard around the world.
And you know, despite his denials, you know, I always thought that this was something that sort of followed him forever, in a way. I mean, Newcomb was pitching for the Dodgers, and they were ahead of the Giants in the game that was going to determine who was going to go to the World Series in 1951. And Newcomb weakened, and they brought Branca into the game. And, of course, he gave up the home run to Bobby Thompson to lose the game. And it was very emotional as we were talking about this. You know, his wife burst out in tears after, you know, that later on that, mm-hmm. that afternoon, and he went to see a priest. And the conversation was very, very interesting. And the other thing that I thought was interesting is that people thought that his career went in decline because of that home run. But in fact, what happened in 1952 while he was pitching, he got hurt. You know, he hurt his back. Mm-hmm. And that's really the thing that ended his career. But Branca had won 20 games. One of the years, 48 or 49, he won 20 games. He was one of the young, great up-and-coming players in baseball.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
And Branca wanted to make sure that I understood that, which I thought was neat. And so I want people who read this also to understand that.
People don't realize, Peter, that Ralph Branca also pitched for the Yankees.
For a minute or two, he did.
Yeah.
He did, not very well.
No, and what was I going to say about Ralph? Did he mention anything about his relationship with Bobby Thompson?
Well, yes. It turned out, because Thompson's one of the nicest people you'd ever know, mm-hmm. ever. And so because of the notoriety of that particular moment, the two of them for many years used to go to card shows and events together.
Oh, right, yeah.
I mean, I've got this on my wall here at home. I've got this fabulous photo. Believe it or not, it's a shot heard around the world. Signed by both Ralph Branca and Bobby Thompson. He must have done that a lot.
They did, yeah.
Yeah,
and they,
yeah, they
what,
really
what
did.
What usually happened, Peter, was Ralph would sign it, hand it over to Bobby, and Bobby would write shot heard round the world with the date.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I saw them at a card show, too, and that's the photo I have exactly. And to equate the situation, probably on a smaller scale, definitely, but a guy who went through the same thing. I had Calvin Schiraldi on the show a couple of months ago. And he really suffered through the anguish of Boston fans feeling their wrath after the 86 World Series.
Well, he should have.
Yeah. Yeah, he.
Oh, I know.
I know.
That you talk about you talk about 1986 to the Boston Red Sox fans, and every one of them will say, you know, talking about the game where the ball rolled under Buckner's legs.
Oh.
That was the worst day of my life.
Yeah.
What they say.
Oh my God, they
what
had
they
it
say.
In their
Gary Carter is one of the people in this particular book, and I put him in because I had spent the 85 season with the Mets. I did a book with Davey Johnson. We wrote a book called Bats.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
It was a game that drove you crazy. So I got to spend, you know, quite a bit of time with that Mets team. And Gary Carter and Sid Fernandez, you know, the three of us would go out to the movies at night while Fernandez and Doc and some of these other guys, where Daryl would go do the things that they were doing.
Yeah, I know.
but Gary Carter was just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful person. And we did an interview for my book, Amazing, a part of which obviously was in the book. But we talked for an hour and 15 minutes, and most of that is in this Baseball Heaven book, where Gary was telling me about his time with the Montreal Expos, where he was, you know, the star catcher of that team. And most of the players, the other players, his teammates, really didn't like him at all. And they didn't like him because he would he would make himself available to the media, and he would give interviews, and he would go on TV, and he'd smile.
Yeah.
You know, they derisively, they called him Camera Carter,
ugh,
which was really kind of weird.
Yeah.
And fortunately, though, the Montreal Expos traded him over to the Mets, and, you know, he was a star and, you know, helped them win in 86.
Right. And he's in Cooperstown where he belongs. And
absolutely.
Gary
absolutely.
Was...
It was so sad about 3 years ago or so, he developed brain cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And it killed him. It was terrible. He was one of the finest people I've ever known.
He was also out here on Long Island as manager of Buddy Harrelson's Ducks.
That's right.
Yeah, spent some time locally. And
yeah.
Much revered man. Yeah, you're exactly right. Well, the book, folks, Baseball Heaven by Peter Golenbach. It's the history of our game, really, at its very best. Peter does a tremendous job. It's chock full of reminiscences. Memories that really make the game we love so great. And available on Amazon, Peter.
Yeah, Amazon, your local bookstore. You can come over to the house and I'll give you one. I'm just, you know, people have loved this thing, and it just makes me very happy.
Well, you did a great job, and I can attest to that, folks. Baseball Heaven, up close and personal, what it was really like in the major leagues. And on the cover, you'll see Doc and Gary, Elston and Mickey, Ted and Pesky. And who is that with Boston? That's the little professor, Dominic DiMaggio.
That's right.
Yep. Great cover. Peter, thanks for taking time out of your Sunday night to spend it with us up here on the island. The book again, folks, Baseball Heaven, up close and personal, what it was really like in the major leagues. Thanks again, Peter.
I enjoyed it. It's my pleasure. Thank you so much, Bill.
That's Peter Golenbach, ladies and gentlemen. We will be back with Sports Talk New York right after this.
Listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we are back with Sports Talk New York here on WGBB. We just listened to the promo for the Gustbuster. How about a Gutbuster? The weekend series with the Mets down in St. Petersburg against the Rays. The only bright spot that I could see from that series was the pitching of young Christian Scott on Saturday night. He really pitched a great game, and the future is very bright for that young man. But Pete Alonso, who's one of my favorites, Jeff McNeil, I don't know whether they need a day off or the hitting coach should be fired, but these guys are mired. They're mired in a deep slump. And something has to be done. Now they move on to the Cardinals, and the Cardinals can surprise you. And then the homestand coming up, folks, in a week or so, The Braves and the Phillies. What's going to happen then? Oh, boy. Well, it comes with the territory, folks, as I spoke with Evan Roberts. Jets, Mets, even the Islanders sometimes. They give you ulcers, but you never leave your team. You stick with your team, and that's what happens. Well, our next guest, he's going to tell us about a wonderful event upcoming in our area. It's of special interest to our pickleball players out there. I'd like to welcome to Sports Talk New York tonight, Peter Bachman. Bachmore, I'm sorry. I'm so used to Randy Bachman that I'm sorry, Pete.
Oh, that's okay, Bill. How are you this evening? I appreciate the invite and having me on.
No worries. Let's talk about the new facility that's coming to Riverhead.
Yeah, fantastic. It's out in Riverhead, the old Kmart building, for those out east that know exactly where it is. It's right next to the BJ's. We got 30,000 square feet of space. We just received the keys the other day from the owner, so we got a couple of months of work to do inside, and then we're targeting a late summer open. We're going to have 9 courts. We're going to have a full kitchen and a full bar, pro shop, lessons, clinics, live music. Basically, we've been listening to the pickleball community out there, mm-hmm. and we want to deliver a one-of-a-kind place, and Box Pickleball is exactly what we intend to bring.
Understood. That sounds like a great facility. We'll be looking for the opening of that, Pete. Now, the festival coming up. Let's talk about that. Go ahead.
Well, listen, what we wanted to do up at Mohegan Sun, Connecticut, is mirror what we are opening out east on Long Island, and that is offering up a community festival competition type environment for really anybody to come and enjoy. It's going to be an end of the summer event. It's the end of August, and we're going to feature pickleball, clinics, lessons, and tournaments. We're going to do cornhole lessons and tournaments. And then we have a lineup of music that is growing by the day, Bill. I mean, I can't believe the amount of inbounds that I'm getting for local bands that want to perform. We're going to start at noon each day for the bands. We're going to open up at 7 a.m. each day, so 3 days from 7 a.m. to midnight. Yeah, that's a big festival event.
Nice.
We're hoping to get lots of traffic coming in and out of there. It's going to be just a wonderful, really big celebratory, kind of atmosphere where we're trying to attract just a lot of locals to really showcase what the games of pickleball and cornhole are doing, but also to embrace just our local communities to really showcase what we can do.
Understood. What are the exact dates for that, Pete?
August 20, 21, and 22. Now, I understand it's midweek, but it's end of the summer. Schools and teachers aren't back yet, so we're really hoping to drive this festival-type, end-of-summer-type block party event.
And is there a fee at admission?
Yep. So if you're going to play pickleball or cornhole, it's $75. If you're going to come and be a spectator, it's $40 per day. Hopefully that's priced right to get the traffic in there. Please go to our website at www.box-pickleball.com and check out all the information about that. We really want to drive ticket sales, showcase what we can do. Our hope is to really make this an annual event, just to really drive home the community aspect of what we want to accomplish, get people in the door to play some pickleball, throw some bags with cornhole, and honestly, Bill, the lineup of music, the sports part, yes, we're going to have, but the music part is also going to be a great complement to this event.
Sounds incredible, Pete. I'm going to repeat for folks who may have missed. It's the Box Pickleball and Music Festival 2024. You want to make this an annual thing, Pete?
I would love to. Again, first time I'm doing this,
mm-hmm.
so I know there's a little bit of a risk that comes with it, but the fun part about it is that it's so organic and changing every day when I get inbound to participate. And just the buzz that we're getting in the pickleball world regionally and and nationally, hopefully we get a really good group of new and seasoned players to come in and really just have a wonderful time. We'd really love to have this shown the right way. Let's have a great experience, video it, and we can, and what I'd like to do is really make this an annual event so that we can end the summer each year. And just make it bigger and better.
Outstanding. Again, folks, this is at Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut. Everybody knows where that is. August 20th, 21st, and 22nd. It's going to go from 7 in the morning till midnight. For tickets and info, you go to www.box-pickleball.com. Again, as Pete said, $40 for spectators, $75 for players. It's 3 days of pickleball, cornhole, and amazing bands. And we'll talk a little bit about who this is going to benefit, Pete.
Yeah, so we part of our mission with just the company and brand Box Pickleball that me and my investors and the people that have supported us is community service. And really embracing not just the Riverhead community and the Long Island community, but the national communities as well. So we've partnered up with three charities that we want to raise the money for with this, and they will be in attendance at this festival. So the first one is Tunnel the Towers, and also there's another one called Abby's Gift, which is my brother's foundation, and then the last one is the U.S. First Responders Organization. So on the first responder side, we are very heavily invested in our first responder world. That's members of our military, veterans, police officers, firemen, EMS workers. We really want to have this event really showcase and thank them for all their work. So our goal here over the next several months and at the festival will be to, just raise awareness and also raise some money so that we can give back to them as well. And the other one is my brother's foundation. So it's abbysgift.org. My niece had passed away from childhood diabetes, juvenile diabetes a few years back. So we put together this foundation to raise awareness for diabetes with children, which really goes undetected in lots of circumstances. So this is what we want to embrace. Again, community is our focus. We want to garner the support wherever we can in this festival environment and really drive home awareness for these organizations.
Now, family, alumni, friends of these groups, they're welcome to compete.
Well, that's exactly right. So what we're also featuring, or at least trying to feature, are competitions between police departments, fire departments, hospitals, veterans, military service. We have some already that have signed up and that are going to be competing. But you don't have to be a member of the military or a first responder to compete. If you're friends, retired, that's great. We're going to call these the first responder challenges, and we're going to feature whoever's there every day. We'll get up on stage and we'll make reference and thank them, obviously, for their service. The other piece of this is we're looking to do collegiate challenges as well. We've had some interested colleges and universities looking to compete as well. So we're very thankful to have them on board, and we will absolutely feature them as well. So, yes, to answer your question, it's friends, alumni, retirees, wear your swag. Please come and play and support those entities during this festival.
That is great that not only the folks from the 501c charities are encouraged to compete, but you got the college kids coming in too. And it's wonderful that young folks are getting involved in an event such as this. And that must be tremendous that you heard from them and to have them aboard, Pete.
Oh yeah, it's great. The collegiate world of pickleball is only growing. It's growing every single day. And, you know, part of what we wanted to do with this is, especially up in Mohegan Sun in the Northeast region, was invite and get colleges and universities at all levels to send teams, send interested parties, come and learn how to play. Because a lot of schools don't have collegiate teams yet. They're not varsity sports. Some of them are creating clubs, which is great. And then some of them don't even have anything like that within their university. So we do invite interested players at all levels, beginners, intermediates, even if you are at the advanced level, please come and, you know, join the fun. Join the competition. You know, we're going to have, you know, a lot of showcasing going on, and this is a really great forum, great opportunity to come. And if you don't have a club started, you can certainly use this platform to do it. We will have professionals on site and provide information from how you can, you know, create a club on both sides. If you want to do a cornhole club, that's great. If you want to do a pickleball club, that's awesome. Colleges and universities are getting on board with offering scholarships for these particular new sports. So why not showcase it at an event like this?
Outstanding. We're speaking to Peter Bachmore about this wonderful event coming up in August. Now, how about the winners, Pete?
Well, winners are going to get paid. So, you know, the more tickets we sell, the more money we're going to have to give. But we will make announcements over the next month and a half with exactly how large those payouts will be. Again, our goal is community support. We also want to drive a little competition with this as well. Hoping to get a lot of foot traffic coming in here, so we will absolutely offer some cash prizes to the winners of all the brackets. And again, what we're going to do is we'll have the competitions broken up by skill level. So if you're a beginner, we will put you in the beginner bracket and going up from there. So we will have it all sorted out. Should be a really, really, really fun celebratory event. With some competition in there, bragging rights, yes, but also an opportunity to make a little cash for the prizes of the tournament.
I don't know if you knew this, Peter, but Rick Barry, former star with the Nets, the Golden State Warriors, wonderful basketball player. He's a pickleball champion. Now, I've had him on the show several times, but I haven't had him on the show since he started playing pickleball. But I've seen him on Facebook posting that he's won awards.
Well, yes, lots of these guys have. A lot of the retirees from the sports that they were in are getting involved, not just playing, but also owning teams. I know, you know, Tom Brady, has a team. I know, James from, you know, on the Lakers, you know, he owns a team. I know he's still playing right now. Some of the other ones, have some as well. So, yes, it's what's really great about the sport? Anybody can play.
Mm-hmm.
Again, at all levels and all competition levels. And it's really great to see that, you know, second athlete careers, you know, after they were done doing what they were doing, are now competing at that level. And it's only getting bigger and better every day. You know, if you're on social media and Facebook and looking around, the whole pickleball world is just exploding with exciting new partnerships and offerings and things to do. Really, really, really great to see.
Not a fad, folks. This is coming at you, and it's for real. And once again, Pete, the people out east, they have something to look forward to at the site of the old Kmart.
That's correct. Yeah, we can't wait. Follow us on Facebook. We're going to be showing pictures as we develop it. This is going to be something really huge. It's going to be an out-of-the-box, brand-new, one-of-a-kind place. There's lots of places to play pickleball, but we really want to showcase what we can do here in a really different light, different than what anybody has ever seen before. This is exactly what people are going to want to see.
Once again, Pete, I'm going to give people the information. This is the Box Pickleball and Music Festival 2024. It's at Mohegan Sun Expo Center, which you know is up in Uncasville, Connecticut. It's August 20th, 21st, and 22nd. It runs from 7 in the morning till midnight. For info and tickets, you can visit their website at www.box-pickleball.com. That's www.box-pickleball.com. It's $40 for spectators, $75 for players. It's, again, 3 days of pickleball, cornhole, and tribute bands. What kind of tribute bands do you have, Pete? Do you know?
I tried to space this out a little bit with the type of music. I think spectators are really going to enjoy the types of bands that we have registered for this. Really focusing on getting everybody in the door. Mm-hmm. So the first night, you can see the full lineup on our website, but we got a Billy Joel tribute band. We got a Queen band.
Nice.
Scream Queen is the name of them. And then we got an 80s band to close that out. The second night, we're actually featuring, an American Idol performer who was on this season's American Idol. Her name is Amanda Mograss. She's going to be mm-hmm. in the building. She's going to play with a couple of our bands. We have a Bon Jovi tribute band from Long Island. They're amazing. A Beach Boys band that we're starting off with. And then we got this band called Ernie and the Band, and these guys are an up-and-coming band from Long Island. They are absolutely spectacular, and they're going to showcase and headline our second night. The third night, we have Strawberry Fields. That is a well-known Beatles band that plays a lot in New York City and up and around, all in the Northeast, and it has been well-known that I know is getting a lot of attention from being up there at our festival. So they are going to be there on the third day. And then we got New York's Finest. It's a Police cover band, and another 80s band to close it off. But what we're also featuring is School of Rock. So Amanda was a School of Rock alum, and we reached out to her School of Rock studio that she started off her stuff in, and they are going to send a band to come and compete, play some pickleball, and also show off what they can do on stage during the day. So we've gotten a lot, and actually we have another all-girls funk band that's going to show up. There are a bunch of teachers from Long Island that are going to be up there one day.
Wonderful. So, again, folks, this is going to raise awareness for Abby's Gift, U.S. First Responders, and Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Pete, it's been a pleasure having you with us again tonight. More luck to you with this event. It's wonderful, and we thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate the time.
That is Mr. Peter Bachmore, and we wish the guys very much luck with that new event. Now, that'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk New York. I'd like to thank my guests, Evan Roberts, Peter Gollenbach, and Pete Bachmore, my engineer, Brian Graves, and, of course, you guys for joining us. I'll see you again on May 19th. Till then, be safe, be well. Bill Donahue wishing you a good evening, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.